Hello, everyone. This is Ben Slavin, the founder of Motorcycle Mexico. Here today, I have some special guests, Carol and Ken Duval, who are traveling currently in the south of Mexico. It is 2 days before Christmas in 2012, and Carol and Ken have graciously offered some time to share us with some of their recent experiences traveling through Mexico on their motorcycle. So, Carol and Ken, welcome and thank you.
Thank you.
Greetings, Ben.
So tell us where you are today, this morning here on a Sunday morning.
We're at a little coastal town called La Manzanilla, at a little restaurant owned by a couple of Dutch friends who did a ride around the world in the early 2000s. They actually stayed with us in Australia for a little while before they came to North America. They pulled up here 10 years ago and decided to make Mexico their home. La Manzanilla is about 50 miles, 80 kilometers north of Manzanillo, between Manzanillo and Puerto Vallarta. So a very quiet little village. Probably a lot quieter than a lot of people expected to be here, but it's pleasant for us.
That's quite nice. And how's the weather down there this time of year in the middle of winter?
Absolutely superb. If you were coming from North America, you would say it would be damn hot.
Nice. The days are warm. Middle of the day, like 2, 3 o'clock, it gets a bit warm, but at night it cools down. It's just to be really pleasant.
Yeah, really nice. Yeah.
And the accommodations that you're staying at, air conditioning required at night, or how does that work?
Oh, no air conditioning for us anyway. We're probably a little bit used to the heat a bit more. Leon and Yolanda have a little small property on the other side of the highway, about 3 kilometres away, just under a mile and a half, 2 miles away, with a couple of cabanas.
Bungalows
with a swimming pool.
The ceiling fan, so I mean, if it does get a bit warm, put the fan on. But we've actually had just a little light blanket on at night because it does, say, cool down a little bit. Depending on where you come from, how you
cope with the cold.
The cold or the heat.
Well, it's great. It sounds like you're having a wonderful stay there in the south of Mexico. So tell me a little bit. You guys are from Australia originally, and you've been traveling for some time. Give us a little update about where you've been.
Yes, this is our second round the world. We did one in 1997 to 2001. We did not do South America on that run. So this second round the world journey, we did 3 years in South America, and now we're in our third year in North America. Our plan is to spend another summer in North America, Canada, and the USA, before venturing over to Japan, Russia, Mongolia, Europe. The time frame for us is very loose. We tend to flex it at will. So at most of the time, we do not know which way we're going from day to day.
It's a good feeling to have sometimes, especially from us in the working world.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I just interrupt you here. I'm looking out on the ocean here. There's a twin master schooner sailing in front of us, full sail. Magnificent.
Wow, how beautiful. That's wonderful. So tell me now, you have been in Mexico. You came down from the U.S. on this most recent crossing. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we crossed over at Douglas in Arizona. And then more or less straight south from there.
We got to a couple of smaller towns, just bumped down overnight before we pushed on. Our aim was to Copper Canyon. We had a dream of getting to the bottom of Copper Canyon a few times, but never ever made it. Now we decided this is the time we were actually attempted. We had the time at our fingertips. So we pushed on to Creole and hooked up with a guy from California on a R100GS who also was looking to get to the bottom of the canyon, Batapilas. And we hooked up with him. Rode from Creole to Guayaquil, spent a night there, and then we ventured down the track to Batapilas. The main road to Batapilas is closed at the moment. For major pavement work. It is estimated this road will be closed for the next 3 to 4 years. So the main road in now is a little longer and a little tougher. The road goes through a little village called Yokibo. And we took this road with mixed feelings, as we'd had reports that it was not doable to up on a large bike. It was more suited to a trail bike. But we attempted and we got down. We had a couple of spills going down and up. But we survived, got a bit dusty, but it was fine. And definitely worth the ride, getting out of that hill. It's a really cute little town at the bottom of the canyon.
That's really nice. And you mentioned that the road was tough. And now I know the bike that you're on, I've seen it before when you stayed with me in New Hampshire, that it's certainly an adventure bike, but riding two up with full luggage is certainly not meant for heavy off-road riding. So tell us a little bit about what it's like riding off-road, especially through Copper Canyon with your bike.
I'm sorry, Ben.
How was it riding with your bike?
Oh, down to the canyon?
Yes.
Oh, it was fine. The pain was the biggest problem. Poor Carol had to walk a few times, coming up the hills and going down the hills. So, probably not so much down, more up the hills. But solo is not an issue.
First and second gear a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It can be quite often sections, as in bumpy and rocky.
Yeah.
You know. And then a lot of
bush.
We call bull dust in Australia or in Africa fish. So a lot of that on the road, and particularly on sort of hairpins, and very steep in some sections. So that's probably where we had most of the problems was when it was steep going up with a lot of the dust on it.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those sections I would volunteer to walk.
Well, it sounds like a good challenge. And now, tell me again, which bike do you have and what kind of tires are you running? Heavy off-road tires or slick tires?
Just an 80-20 dual sport. I'm just using Tenders at the moment, and they have worked fine. Richie, the guy from California, anticipating some fairly soft stuff, he let his tires down. He must have picked up a patch of thorns and had 9 punctures. One was a stone hole and the other were thorns. So he had a major puncture repair job on his tubeless front tyre when we were in Batapilas. The repair was done and he got out no problem at all. But he has since replaced the tyre. 9 holes was a little much for him.
So how is it finding some help when you and your buddy had difficulties with the bike, fixing the tire or getting other mechanical help? Have you had to do that on this recent trip?
Richie's Spanish was pretty good. Also, we stayed at a little place called Hotel Juanita. The lady there was just so helpful. She had all the information and directed us anywhere we wanted to go. Best restaurant, best place to buy this, best place to do this, go and look at this, go and look at that. She was very, very helpful.
And it can't happen to be the tyre repairer in town. So there's a couple of steps away.
Oh, say, you broke up just a little bit there, but you were saying that the hotel owner was the tyre repairer?
He was the tyre repairer was the hotel owner's, Juanita's cousin.
Oh, convenient.
Yes.
Everybody knows somebody in Mexico.
Batapilas
is only a small town.
Yeah.
So, I'd say they all know each other. I think she'd lived there all her life.
Yeah.
The
hotel name or place was given to us by a Canadian guy who frequents Batapilas and the Grand Copper Canyon. In fact, he's been coming there for about 9 years. He just loves the place so much. He comes all the way down from BC every year in October to visit this particular area. And has never had any problems. So it is a really nice place.
You know, what is it about the area that makes it so special?
The people. It's always the people. We are instilled a fear by the media and our politicians. And when you get there, you find out, there's probably definitely problems here. But 99% of the people, they are just like you or I.
But the scenery getting down there was spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, coming through the canyon and the mountain and
and you just see down the distance this little village along the river, and to finally get there was really nice.
The day we got back from Patapus to Goyakotchi, we hooked up with another Australian guy who had heard of the road and was thinking about doing it as well, and wanted to pick our brains to see how difficult it was. He was solo on a 1200 Super Tenere, the new one. And I said, you know, it's doable solo. You know, you would have no problems. He did it, did some video on it. I think it's on YouTube. And he said to me, I would never miss the ride just to get to Batapilas. He was so pleased to be there, really enjoyed it. So even though the track down was pretty tough, you know, it was really worth the effort to get down there. On that road section, the roads around the rim of the canyon are nothing short of superb. You're talking pine forests with numerous twisty roads, great riding, and very little traffic. I think we experienced probably 3 or 4 cars and maybe half a dozen long trucks in the time we travelled, and it was like 5 or 6 hours in a day. It was absolutely perfect. On the top of the canyon. This is the paved road on top of the canyon.
That sounds fantastic. I regret that I have not had the chance to make it through Copper Canyon yet, and I hope to on a future trip. But everything I read online and pictures I see and people I talk to, they say that Copper Canyon is one of the highlights of their journey. Just that exactly what you say is that the roads are spectacular, the scenery is spectacular, the people are nice in small little towns. But I have been warned that... two things. One, not to go there in the winter. People think of Mexico as a warm place, but I hear it can be quite chilly in the wintertime. Did you guys experience any cold in the high elevations?
It was quite chilly in...
in Creole and quite, it was cool at night. The accommodation we had in Creole had reverse cycle air conditioning, the heater. I do believe we had it running. But in Guayaquil, we had nothing but blankets, and it was fine. In fact, I found the climate a little warmer in Guayaquil than Korea. The days are nothing short of superb. Really, really nice. 75, 80 degrees. That's probably getting down to 40s, 50s at night.
That sounds like perfect motorcycling weather and perfect sleeping weather.
Oh, yeah.
I believe so, probably... January, February might get a little cooler. Well, probably January's the coolest time, but it can get down below freezing at night. Mm. So it just depends. I mean, they do get the occasional lot of snow, but I don't think it lays around very long. Mm-hmm.
And so the other thing I hear often about Copper Canyon is that it can be dangerous, either with narco traffic or bandidos or anything else. What has been your experience riding through?
We never experienced anything at all. There is a Sri Lankan guy traveling at a moment on 1150 GSA, and he went down the same route as us. I think it was the day or two after that he crossed the road between Creole and Guayaquil. There were some bandits on the road holding cars up, and they actually apprehended 4 local women and subsequently murdered them. They had some cash in the car.
And a new car, a 2012 model car.
We do not know whether there was some inside information and they were aiming for these people, but they were actually going to Guayaquil for a funeral. And it was mid-afternoon, probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe a little later, that they were apprehended. We travelled that road and never saw things. It was very, very quiet. So we almost thought it was quite odd that they happened to be there when these people were coming through. Also, when we were in Guayaquil, the little hotel that we stayed at, and a restaurant attack, the night we were having dinner there, a local guy working for the government, a very good English, and he came in and he said, be very, very careful, and warned that there were bandits around in the area. I said, no, you're safe, just be careful out on the highway. I said, okay.
like they've never experienced anything. This is our third time in Mexico in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And we've had any more. So you can always be in the wrong place at the wrong time, but you can do that in any country.
Yeah.
So be aware, I think, of the situation and look at people if someone's going to stop you, whether you want to keep going or you want to stop, you know.
Yeah, we always pick on locals and say, because it's make you travel this highway, and they say, yes, there's no problem. So we always ask for local help to make sure we're covering all bases.
Actually, we met another fellow Australian traveller, Trevor, on their Super Panoray. He was going from Gurukochi to Parel, and he wanted to take a Highway 24 went from Parel, not into Parel. And the guy at the intersection told him, no, don't go that way, go through Parel and onto Durango that way. And he said it's not safe doing the other road.
So the locals are extremely helpful. They know the bad roads and they say don't go there. So, you know, that being said, we always refer to the issues that we've had while we've been staying in the USA. You know, the Tucson shopping center shootings, the picture theater, the movie theater shootings, and now a school. Mm. So, you know, you can be at the wrong place at the wrong time. These guys, these bandits, I suppose, are attached to drug cartels. You know, maybe that's where they concentrate their bad things that they do to people, but generally we don't see it that much.
Well, so the you're breaking up just a little bit, but we got a good clip of that story where, you know, bad things can happen anywhere, and you could always be at the wrong place at the wrong time. There's no guarantees, but I think what you're saying is that you feel confident most of the time traveling, listening to local advice, and just using your common sense to stay safe. Is that a good recap?
Exactly, yes.
But how does it make you feel when somebody tells you that there's something dangerous, or when you hear terrible stories about those women who were murdered? How does that play into your travel scheme?
It doesn't make us any more alert. We are already alert and careful. We always have, you know, plans and say, well, this guy says it's not safe to go that way. We don't go that way. End of story. It just doesn't happen. You know, the local people on the ground, they know the better roads. You know, I don't know what else we can do. We traveled 3 years and, you know, 100,000 kilometers in South America. Never had a problem. Colombia, we did 3 weeks and 3,000 kilometers in Venezuela and really had no issues. We just listen to what locals say. We stop in a town, we say, is it safe to walk in the streets at night? Some say no, some say, hey, there's no problems. So always ask. They will tell you.
Interesting.
You know, they may say it's unsafe for a gringo or a white person, but then you look outside and all the locals are walking around and say, well, why do you tell us unsafe? Unsafe. Maybe because they target tourists. So this is what we do. I probably wouldn't walk in the streets in New York or Washington, D.C. at night. So, you know, it's just some things you just do and don't do. There were places in South America I wouldn't go out at night. You know, so it's just... it's a matter of common sense and asking people.
Yeah, that's it. Just being streetwise and always current and just talking with local folks. And I've got a specific question here for Carol. Being a woman, how do you feel traveling down through Latin America? Any different perhaps than Ken?
No, I don't feel any different problems. You know, I can go walking to the shop by myself and do different things. But I haven't really felt any problems. There's always plenty of women walking in the street. You know, if it was a more of a male-dominated area and you don't see any women, then it might be a little different. But here there's always plenty of women walking around, so you know, you feel fairly safe that way. But, yeah, no, I haven't had any problems at all.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this one, too. You mentioned that you speak with locals and get local advice. Tell us about your Spanish-speaking abilities and how that works.
Very bad.
That's a nasty question, Ben. That's a really nasty. let's just say most people say our Spanish after all this time in Latin America is abysmal. And I have to agree with them.
So how do you get by with limited Spanish abilities?
No. It's we have words that really, you know, we apply to get an answer that, you know, we just have to use the words out of a sentence, but they know what we're getting at, and they say yay or nay whether there is a difficult problem or if it's food. Basic words. We know all the numbers. We know all the colours. Stuff like that. We know names of foods, but as far as stringing a sentence together, no, we couldn't really have a decent conversation. So, but most people persist with us when we're trying to get some information or they're trying to tell us something, and they will persist with us, so, which is really good.
A lot of sign language comes into it, picture drawing, and, you know, we were down in Baja back in 1997 on our first trip. And we knew no Spanish at all then because we hadn't really planned to travel to Mexico. And we had a conversation with a local guy who spoke no English, and that went on for about 3 hours. And we got our message across, and he got his message across, and we had a good time together. So, I mean, if you want to make it work, you can.
So it just takes a little patience and a little loose communication.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I take my hat off to the Mexicans. They really have patience with us.
Yeah, so the other side of that story is, you know, one side is your Spanish-speaking abilities, but how about, have you run into many people who speak English?
A lot. It's surprising how many people are speaking English. Even in this little town, La Manzanilla, we were down at the markets yesterday in the plaza, and I was amazed at how much English was being spoken down there by the local people. So it is definitely, you know, becoming a bilingual society between North America and Mexico.
Interesting. And so I'm going to ask now, any Spanish phrases that really stand out being particularly useful that you've learned down in Latin America on this trip?
Outstanding phrases. Carol, give him your routine to getting a routine, getting a habitation.
Well, yeah, I suppose getting accommodation is one thing, yeah. I always just say habitación, dos personas. For us, we only got one bed because that's cheaper, so uno matrimonio, and a question of how much.
Yeah, so once you get into the accommodation routine, it's the same thing every day. You know, do you have a room for two people, one bed? What is the price? Tell me about the prices, and can you negotiate, or do they try and give you a really high price because you're a gringo? What's that all like?
It's posible más económico, por favor.
Can you have something less expensive?
Yes. And, you know, someone will negotiate if it's a quiet time, you know, but not too many tourists in town. But a lot of the time they're giving us the price that's on the wall, so it might be written up on a sheet on the wall, so you can see that they're not ripping off the gringo. Mm. But sometimes you can still try and negotiate them down if you feel that it's a bit too high for where you are or
the
standard of the room or the time of the year.
Yeah. The other thing is also estacionamiento por el mundo. Is very important.
Ken, you broke up there. Can you repeat that, please?
Parking for the bike is one of the main things we have to look at when we're getting accommodation, if we can get safe parking for the bike.
Yeah, very important. So you're saying you don't want to leave it on the street. So where do you put your bike? Where does the hotel, do they have a parking lot? Where can you place the bike?
It can vary from in the foyer. We stayed in Durango in the Hotel Plaza Catedral, and we actually park in the foyer. And this is quite a grand hotel right on the main street. And
it's not an expensive hotel, but a nice old hotel, right in the center opposite the cathedral and adjacent to the plaza, the main plaza. So, yes, they let you park it right in the foyer. Other times they might have a garage or a parking area locked up that you can park in. In Zacatecas, we stayed at the youth hostel there, and it was actually parked on the street, but it was right outside the door of reception, and they have a camera on the building opposite to show the entrance of the hotel. So they said they can always see the bike.
Mm. And it's 20, and the reception was manned 24 hours.
So there was no problem there. We parked for 3 nights there and had no problem.
No problem.
But we still locked it up and put a cover on it.
Yeah. This is our probably major security is locking it up and putting a cover on it.
And what does that do? Why lock it up? Why put the cover on?
The cover reduces the temptation, and it's an interesting looking bike because it's got a lot of stickers on it. It looks a bit grand sometimes, despite its age. So turning it into a dusty black blob with a dirty, dirty, really ugly looking patched up bike cover, it just takes away the temptation, you know.
And we still put a lock on the wheels, just as a deterrent.
Mm.
Right.
A real thief would just pick it up and carry away. So that, you know, just a deterrent. And it's never a problem. It's never, ever a problem. The owner's car was parked up against it for the night, so someone would have had to move his car to get our bike car. So that gives you an idea how careful they are. But he said, you won't have any problem here. So apparently a lot of people park in the front of this hostel and never have problems. So, and we didn't either.
Again, so you're taking the recommendation of the locals, the hotel owner, the hotel worker will give you some good advice on whether or not it's safe to leave the bike out or where you can keep it and where it's going to be safe.
Yes.
Okay. In Creole, we stayed in a hotel right in the center of town. The courtyard where we parked was not locked up, but by the time all the vehicles had arrived, you couldn't move out of that. You had to wait for everyone else to leave first, because there were so many vehicles boxed this thing. So it was really quite, you know, and it's probably no more than about 12 feet, 14 feet away from our bed. So it was very, very close, which we're very comfortable with. In all our years travelling, wherever we stay, we've never had problems with the bike and its position where we parked it.
Hmm. All right, so here's what I want to do. I'll take an aside for just a moment. I want to remind people that are listening that first of all, thank you very much for Ken and Carol for your advice. You've given a lot of interesting feedback for what to do, what it's been like on your recent trip through Mexico, how to stay safe, how to keep the bike safe, how to interact with locals and the local advice. I just want to remind folks that MotorcycleMexico.com, it also has a lot more information from travelers like Ken and Carol who have traveled through Mexico one or several times over the last few years. Everyone sharing their advice on things like crossing the border, getting insurance, staying safe, dealing with military checkpoints, breaking the language barrier. So you can always check out the website for more information. And now back to Ken and Carol. You are here 2 days before Christmas on the Mexican Pacific coast. Sounds like quite a nice time, a nice place to spend Christmas. Tell us a little bit about where you're going to go in the future from here.
Yeah, well, the plan for this winter is quite a bit of Mexico. We need to have a really good look, good slow look of Mexico. And then we're going to bench down into Guatemala, Belize, and then probably a quick venture into Honduras because you want to see the Copan ruins, and then we'll come back up through the other side of Mexico, the eastern side of Mexico, back into the USA, probably around February. Early March we go back to Australia to visit family, and then back in April we'll do another journey through North America, Canada, coming back to our friend's place in Arizona, Phoenix, before preparing the bike for Russia in 2014. But the winter will be once again spent in Mexico. We will come down here and spend another winter down here. So what we don't see this winter, we'll see it next winter.
Nice. So it seems like you're continually missing the snow, always staying in the nice warm climates.
We like to have an all year round summer.
Now, I've got to ask, too, your bike is registered in Australia, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
But you've been on the road for quite some time, so how does this work?
You could never do this without friends back home, and we have very good friends to take care of this. They pay our registration and road tax, and send the documents over to us and maintain it all the time.
And then we just transfer the money to them and do it that way.
Our style of travelling, it is a must to do this because although we don't need a carnet de passage for the Americas, we will need it for Africa and Asia. So to get into Japan, we will need a carnet de passage. It is like a passport for the bike to stop you selling your bike in their country to avoid tax. So when we leave the USA and head to Japan, we will have a carnet de passage. When we arrange this, we must have a vehicle ownership document and registration, legal papers that is current. And the actual document is organized through an automobile association. So we must maintain our documents legally, so which is fine for us. It makes it easier to bring the bike back home to Australia.
So even though you don't need a carnet de passage for Latin America, you're keeping all of your documents current so that when you travel elsewhere in the world, your bike will be ready to go.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. And we put a big sign across the back of the bike saying that we are from Australia. But it cuts us a bit of slack when we have some wayward road managers, which we are unfamiliar with the road. We use this a lot in the USA when we're in the wrong lane. We need to get off a certain exit on a motorway or a freeway. And we just say, you know, can we get over here? We need to get off because we don't know this road. And it gives us a little bit of slack. So
so is that same trick work in throughout Mexico where you've gone through some perhaps military checkpoints? They look at the Australia license plate and they cut you a little slack?
Oh, yes. It's a conversation and they want to talk to you for hours. It's very usually our road checks with military is a very pleasant affair.
We also get a lot of thumbs up from other drivers on the road when they see you from Australia.
Yeah.
So they're quite pleased that you're traveling in their country.
Ah, interesting. That's a great way to meet people, just have the Australia plate on the back.
Yeah.
Nice. So how many miles do you have there on your bike, and how many more do you see it going?
We've got about 795,000 k's on the bike at the moment.
You said almost 800,000 miles, you said?
No, this is kilometres. So we're talking at about 500,000 miles.
Half a million miles.
The bike's 31 years old. It's an ongoing maintenance issue. So we're continually, you know, looking after it. There are little bits and pieces that are wearing out now, but we just maintain it. It rarely breaks down. Rare. It is very rare. I don't think it's been on the back of a truck because of a breakdown. So generally, they just keep going and we just, you know, do the maintenance. We do a fair bit before we tackle a country like Mexico and South here in the USA because we have access to parts. So we like to think that in the Central American area, we will be doing nothing but changing the oil, filling with the gas, and changing tires. Mm. So far, that's been the case.
So it's working out well for you thus far. Well, great.
Yeah.
We could certainly talk for hours and hours and hours about your trip, your travels, your journeys through Mexico this time, and all your trips in the past. But I will keep it short, and if people are interested in learning more about your travels, is there any place they can go to read up more and hear about what you've been up to?
Yes, our blog, which is so far behind, it's not funny, but this is our dream to get reasonably up to date while we're moving slowly to Mexico, is on Horizons Unlimited under a surname Duval. So it's Traveler Stories on Horizons Unlimited and our surname Duval. If anyone wants to contact us while traveling, we're reasonably good at answering emails. Ben knows it well. It's bmwduval@hotmail.com. So if anyone wants to contact us for information about where we've been or where we're going, please don't hesitate.
Great. I'll put the links there on the website when I publish the audio. So great. Well, thank you very much. And now, as I prepare to let you go, I have to ask you one more question. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that maybe I should have that you'd want to share a story or give some advice for future travelers?
I'm just still looking out at the water in front of me at the moment. The water was boiling with fish a few minutes ago. The pelicans were going ballistic. the fishing people have increased probably another half a dozen. It's very busy up on the beach in front of us. I think there's a unbelievable, I can't believe how many fish are here. It's just crazy.
But also, Leon and Yolanda, our Dutch friends that we're staying with at the moment, they have a couple of bungalows that they rent out, and they're very happy to assist any overland motorcyclists if they come through. So they have a pretty good deal if they want to stay there. They have Wi-Fi not at the house. They do have it at their restaurant, which is, you know, only a little, which is right on the beach here.
And there's a little shed there. They can do a service on the bike and do a bit of maintenance and things like that. So, you know, it's pretty handy.
Yeah. Even if people are just passing by and want to stop in, any advice, they're quite happy to help any travellers that come along this way.
There was an Australian couple travelling through just recently heading to South America, and Leon went and dragged him off the street and brought him in here, and they end up staying a few days. So they're pretty friendly in that regard.
That's where you guys are calling from this morning. You're on their at their beach restaurant down there in the south of Mexico, and you know our communication is mostly clear, but we've broken up a couple times. It sounds like the Wi-Fi is pretty good, perhaps for surfing the web. But as we tried to do a video Skype, perhaps it wasn't that good. But it seems to be getting along okay.
Yeah, listen, I tell you what, we can send you some stills of the area, some still photos. And you can, you know, lift and put them on whatever you want to.
Oh, that's great. I really look forward to that. And I will also include a link to, do these folks have a website for their bungalows?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
Okay, so
we'll put it on anyway.
Great. I'll get that from you and we'll put it up.
Yeah, we can do that. No problem at all.
Excellent. Well, hey, I want to say thank you again, Carol, Ken Duvall. Thanks very much for your time. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and a happy new year. And many more wonderful and exciting miles ahead of you as you continue on.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and also to you as well.